This morning, we take you inside the uprising in Egypt for a special edition of This Week, live from Cairo. We were first inside the palace.
Thank you.
We were first to speak with the embattled president. And today, more of my exclusive interview with the man who holds the key to Egypt's future. We have faced the mobs.
You are not with us.
Okay.
Our vehicles attacked.
Did they hurt you? Waggy?
We have seen the rage and the violence. We have heard the people. Now, the question everyone is asking, what next for Egypt? What will it mean for the United States and for the world? A very special This Week, Crisis in Egypt, starts now. Hello again from Cairo, where it has been an epic week here and across Egypt. The joy, the fear, the sheer power of people, the pathos of a president who tells me he knows his time is up. The almighty struggle just to bear witness to get the story out. And today, the start of an unprecedented new political process. We have all the major actors, we have all the players, the massive moments in this electrifying drama. Whatever happens next, whatever becomes of this situation, the truth is that nothing will ever be the same in the Arab world. And that matters here, and it matters to you. It has been the likes of which we have never seen before. This was the week the simmering tension in Tahrir Square boiled over, a change we could sense as early as Monday with a new display of force by the Egyptian army. As we approached the square, we saw more tanks, more armored vehicles, more foot soldiers trying to slow the traffic of protesters who've been streaming in for the past week.
We spoke to an army captain who doesn't want to go on camera, but who told me that his orders are to maintain discipline and to seal the square.
At one point, we got caught up in the crowd surging forward towards the square. But past the bottleneck, the shoving stopped and the protesters seemed to be in good spirits.
Welcome to Cairo. Welcome.
And it was that optimistic spirit that you felt in the square, flags waving, people singing.
President Hosni Mubarak, change.
And they definitely wanted to be heard.
You, Mubarak, we will put you to a crushing defeat. Whatever you do, you will be put to a crushing defeat. We never want you.
If that sounds like a primal scream, that's because it is. These are people who haven't been able to speak their mind for 30 years. And so as night fell on Liberation Square last Monday, protesters camping out in tents were infused with new hope that change was coming. But the days ahead would only bring new challenges and grave danger. The next morning, for the first time, we ran into a crowd of pro-Mubarak supporters. Afraid of losing everything, the president they've known for 30 years. Afraid their country would descend into chaos. I was caught up in their palpable fear, practically pinned to the wall.
Why are you here today?
We are here to support our president, Mohammed Hosni Mubarak, because we want them to be our president, even forever.
It's a strange mix of emotions. Here, Mubarak's people embrace the soldiers. And down the road, at the entrance to Liberation Square, anti-Mubarak protesters work with the military as well. Volunteers help with security. They check IDs as people file into the square for what organizers hope would grow to a million marchers.
Why are women and men being separated?
Because this is personally checked. Because no men touch women.
And what are you checking for?
Bombs.
Even though the army's out in force, even though the government tried to stop them by closing down the train station, sealing off some of the roads, this has been non-stop all day. It is certainly the biggest protest that this city has seen since they began a week ago.
The mood was jubilant. Egyptians, for the first time, were able to see life beyond the shadow of President Mubarak.
Do you think he did anything good for Egypt?
Yes, I did.
He's done a lot of good for Egypt. He's a tragic figure in a way. He started out, you know, honorable, good, and well. But then in the end, the concentration of power, his grip on power, his obsession with it, is bringing this country down.
And that night, the protesters came a step closer to getting what they wanted when President Mubarak announced that he would not run in the next elections. A victory, but here it still wasn't enough.
They're shouting, leave, leave.
And by morning, it became only too clear that the system would not go down without a fight. It started with a group of pro-Mubarak demonstrators shouting angrily, he's not leaving, making their way towards the anti-Mubarak protesters assembled in Liberation Square. They streamed in on foot along the Nile and even floated down it. We were standing on a nearby rooftop watching as their numbers exploded. And suddenly this almost medieval sight, men riding horses and camels galloping in at breakneck speed, charging the crowd and cracking their whips. Soon this square was a battleground and it raged on for hours. Rocks were hurled from both sides. There were bloody beatings and Molotov cocktails tossed into the crowd. Some were likely genuine Mubarak supporters, but others clearly thugs sent in as agitators. People began ripping up pavement and turning it into weapons. At least three were killed and hundreds more were injured. A mosque turned into a field hospital. We went back to the square and quickly found ourselves surrounded by an angry mob of pro-Mubarak supporters.
We had American, we had any country more. Okay, go to any place more.
You want us to go?
Yes, I want you to go to from here.
Why?
Because we are hate you. We hate American.
You hate us?
Yes, I hate you and I hate you.
Why do you hate us?
You are not good personnel. Go to any place more, please. Go to any place more.
You are not with us.
Okay.
You are not with us.
Okay.
They kicked in the car doors and broke our windshields as we drove off.
They hit the car with their fists over and over again and threw a rock through the front window. The glass is shattered all over our driver. Are you okay? Did they hurt you? Waggy?
No.
Did they hit you?
No.
Violence flared that night as firing started into the crowd. Morning brought with it some calm.
Inside the barricades, again the protesters are lining up their own civil defense here, prepared for what might happen this afternoon.
All over the square, we saw the weary and the wounded.
One of the stones came here and I forgot, just above my eyebrow.
Their foreheads, noses, faces bandaged and bloody. Reinforcements were pouring in. People came with new supplies, bottled water and bread, blankets, digging in for the long haul.
Well, this is fruit juice, yes. And this is
cotton and sutures
and surgical gloves.
It was then that we heard we were going to get our exclusive interview with Vice President Omar Suleiman. On our way there, we were apprehensive. Journalists had come under attack all day, and at one point, an angry mob surrounded our car. We reached the palace, which is surrounded at this point by tanks, under military escort. And as our cameraman was setting up for our exclusive interview with Vice President Omar Suleiman, I asked if I could see President Mubarak. Within minutes, I was whisked into a reception room to see him. I asked him how he was. He said, I feel strong. He said, I'm not the kind of person to run, and he said, I will die on Egyptian soil. When I asked him about whether he would step down now, he said to me, you know, Christiane, I've been in public service for 62 years, and now I'm fed up and I want to retire. He said he didn't care what people were saying about him right now. He said that he cared only about his country, about Egypt, and that when the time comes, he said he would die in Egypt. When we returned to Tahrir Square the next day, we were surrounded by people who had heard about my meeting with the president and who wanted to ask me about it.
I spoke to him yesterday. I saw him at the palace, and I said to him, there are people who tell me they don't trust you when you say you will step down. And he said, I've made my decision.
What did he say exactly?
He said that he felt that he had met your demands.
No, of course, he's a liar. He's a big liar. We don't believe him at all.
Now, with the White House pushing publicly for a quicker political process to start and help the transition along, these protesters are growing impatient for just that.
The next election, he could do a lot of things before he steps down. We don't trust him.
The war on the ground, the struggle has been achieved. We still have not achieved the political battle.
We need a book called The Constitution. If we vote in a person that we don't like, the next time we don't vote him in.
But there are many Egyptians who are just as impatient for these protests, which have brought the economy to a screeching halt, to end.
We'll go back to work and continue our lives.
So what do you think should happen now?
We think it should stop. I mean, what has been offered by the government, what has been granted by the government and the concessions they made is enough for now.
For the first time in the last couple of days, we're walking freely on this bridge, which has been the site of clashes, of surrounding journalists, of being hostile. Today, it's peaceful.
And with calm restored to the square, the protesters were left to watch and wait.
And so today, for the first time after this incredible week, things look a bit back to normal. There is traffic. Banks have been open for several hours today. And also an unprecedented political process is underway. For the first time in the history of this country, the government has now met with members of the Muslim Brotherhood and other opposition groups, including members of the youth movement. But the Muslim Brotherhood is banned here, and yet the powerful Vice President Omar Suleiman has now been meeting with them. They've had meetings to which they've said they've organized a committee to lift the repressive state of emergency that's been in effect for decades, and also to lift press restrictions on the state press here, that they will be free and able to work without any censorship. We discussed all this in my exclusive interview with Omar Suleiman. You said that you had started dialogue with the opposition parties.
Yes.
Including Mr. Al-Baradei?
No, Baradei is not one of the opposition. He has his own group, which related to the Brother Muslimhood or have links with Brother Muslimhood. And Brother Muslimhood asked me that they want to open a dialogue with me without Mr. Baradei.
What do you understand by transition must happen now, as the United States is saying and many other countries are saying?
It is a process, starting by national dialogue, which I started this morning, and we will continue tomorrow and after tomorrow. We want the young people to know that all your demands, all your requests, we respond positively, and we promise that we will do, and we need quiet time to implement these things to happen.
What is your fear if President Mubarak was to say, I've had enough? He told me that he's had enough, 62 years of public service, and he wants to go, but not quite yet. What are the concerns? Why would he not go now?
We don't want chaos in our country. If President Mubarak will say that I'm leaving now, who will take over? In the Constitution, that means the Speaker will take over. I think with this atmosphere, that means the other people who have their own agenda will make instability in our country.
Will you present yourself as a candidate for president?
No. According to this constitution, I cannot. I am not from any party. I'm not belonging to any party or to any group, which I cannot be a candidate as a constitution.
If it was possible, would you run for president?
I don't think so.
Why?
Well, I became old man. I did a lot for the country. And I have no ambitions to be president of this country. When the president asked me to be vice president, I accept it directly just to help the president in this critical time.
When you see what's happening on the streets of Egypt, of Tunisia, and now of Jordan and Yemen and Syria, what do you think? These are young people who want a different world.
This is the Islamic current who pushed these people.
You think that?
Yes.
You don't think it's young people who want their rights, their freedom?
I don't think that's only from the young people. Others are pushing them to do that.
In many parts of the Arab world, there's been no democracy. Do you not think the young people in today's world, connected to the internet, seeing everything that they see, do you not think that it comes from their hearts?
It facilitates to talk all together. But it's not their idea. It comes from abroad.
Do you believe in democracy?
For sure, everybody believes in the democracy.
So do you not...
But when you will do that? When the people here will have the culture of democracy?
We know what the opposition wants. What do you want from the opposition?
I want from the opposition to understand that in this limited time, we can do what President Mubarak have said. And we cannot do more. And when new president will come, you will have more time to make any changes you want.
What message do you have for the young people who are still standing and still in that Liberation Tahrir Square?
We can say only go home. We cannot do more than that. We cannot push them by force. Everybody have to go home. We want to have normal life. We don't want anybody in the streets. Go to work. Bring back once again the tourists. Go to the normal life. Save the economy of the country.
Mr. Vice President, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
With the Egyptian government now meeting with the Muslim Brotherhood and other opposition leaders, including members of the youth movement, could this be the beginning of the path to political stability? Joining me now from Washington is Egypt's ambassador to the United States, Sameh Shoukry. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, Ambassador Shoukry, this is unprecedented, isn't it? The Egyptian government, Vice President Soleiman, meeting with leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, it's certainly a very important development, one that indicates willingness to discuss and continue to on the reform process with all the segments of the opposition, including the Muslim Brotherhood.
So since this political process seems now to be publicly underway, what is the roadmap? Everybody wants to know that.
The roadmap continues to be an orderly and meaningful transition to greater democratic reforms, meeting the aspirations of the Egyptian people in terms of their economic well-being, and continuing to prepare for the transition for the next presidential elections.
What do you understand the United States' position to be now, publicly and behind the scenes? Their special envoy, Frank Wisner, has said that for reform to happen, for the Constitution to be amended, President Mubarak needs to be at the helm of that process.
The U.S. administration, I think, can only be referred can only refer you to the statement by President Obama, quite an extensive statement last Friday, in which he indicated on several occasions that this was an Egyptian process, that this was an issue that the Egyptian people would decide, and that the importance was an orderly and meaningful transition of the presidency and the new direction towards greater democratic and economic and social reforms. Ambassador Wisner is a recognized, very competent and an experienced diplomat, as was mentioned by everybody associated to the administration, the spokesman, the White House spokesman, and I'm sure his opinion is highly valued.
Let me ask you, a consensus seems to have come out of the meeting today between Vice President Soleiman, the Muslim Brotherhood and others, that they will form a committee to start talking about amending the constitution, but importantly, that they have agreed to lift the decades-old state of emergency. How significant is that? That, of course, has been responsible for the oppressive political atmosphere and the repressive security atmosphere here.
It would be a very significant move. It has been a long-standing demand of most of the opposition and many segments of Egyptian society to guarantee that all political activity is undertaken under normal law and in the confines of the normal judiciary. So it would be a significant step and an indication of confidence that the political process is moving forward.
And lastly, you have seen, the world has seen, the appalling images of the crackdown on the reporters and the journalists trying to tell this story. How bad has that been for Egypt, and why was that allowed to happen?
It's a deplorable situation, one that has been condemned by various officials in the Egyptian government. It is totally unacceptable. But unfortunately, the security vacuum and the difficult situation with many different segments and proponents of these demonstrations have caused a difficult security environment. I am confident that this will not be recurring.
And Ambassador, just one last thing. The violence against the protesters, how bad has that been for Egypt, and why was that allowed to happen?
This is a very wide protest movement. The emotions were high and the situation was tense, and the capability of the military to handle this sort of situation was not at the outset sufficient. That has been rectified, and now the military has more men on the ground to be able to handle this situation. And as you have noticed, during the last two or three days, demonstrations have been underway under the protection of the military without any incidents of violence.
Ambassador Shukri, thank you for joining us. And certainly the atmosphere has changed completely. It is peaceful on the streets right now. Now, everything that's happened here is, of course, being monitored very closely in Washington by the U.S. administration. One of the things that came out this week was that President Mubarak told me that he never intended, or that he would not have his son Gamal Mubarak succeed him. This was the first time he had said that in public. And of course, all week and throughout this crisis, the White House has been struggling with the need to have a transition here to heed the will of the people who want democracy and the need to keep stability. Jake Tapper has all of that from the White House.
As President Obama has tried to move away from a longtime U.S. ally / dictator and towards demonstrators in the streets of Cairo, he has, in the words of one U.S. official, seemed to take a new position every 12 hours, only to be overtaken by events. The protests began on January 25th, and the administration did not appear unduly concerned.
Our assessment is that the Egyptian government is stable.
The president was focused on his annual State of the Union address with its domestic focus and nod to the rest of the world.
Recent events have shown us that what sets us apart must not just be our power. It must also be the purpose behind it.
But while President Obama mentioned democratic movements elsewhere, the one playing out in the streets of perhaps our strongest Arab ally was not mentioned directly.
The United States of America stands with the people of Tunisia and supports the democratic aspirations of all people.
But who was the United States standing with in Egypt? On Thursday, PBS asked the vice president if the time had come for Mubarak to go. He said no.
Mubarak has been an ally of ours in a number of things. I would not refer to him as a dictator.
Just one day later, the situation was spiraling out of control in Egypt. For the first time, the White House said that President Obama had been doing more than discussing human rights and democratic reforms with Mubarak. He'd been confronting him.
On several occasions, directly confronted President Mubarak on it and pushed him on the need for political reform.
Hours later, Mubarak felt the situation dire enough he needed to fire his cabinet and address the nation. That prompted a presidential response here.
He pledged a better democracy and greater economic opportunity. I just spoke to him after his speech, and I told him he has a responsibility to give meaning to those words.
But in that phone call, sources tell ABC News, President Obama was surprised to hear Mubarak assure him that the government would be able to take care of the situation. White House officials worried Mubarak just didn't get it when he filled his cabinet with familiar allies. Intelligence Chief Omar Suleiman became vice president, for instance. As has been said, denial isn't just a river in, well, you know. So the administration decided to do more. New talking points were issued. An orderly transition needed to begin.
We want to see these reforms and a process of national dialogue begun.
And secretly, former ambassador to Egypt Frank Wisner, at the suggestion of Secretary Hillary Clinton, was dispatched to meet with Mubarak in Cairo. Wisner conveyed a message to Mubarak that he should not be on the September ballot, and neither should his son Gamal. That night, Mubarak delivered the first part of that message, but not the second. The president continued to up the pressure.
An orderly transition must be meaningful, it must be peaceful, and it must begin now.
Now? Yes, now.
Now started yesterday.
The president has long spoken in favor of universal rights.
Assalamu alaikum.
Most notably in June 2009 in Cairo.
I do have an unyielding belief that all people yearn for certain things. The ability to speak your mind and have a say in how you are governed. They are human rights, and that is why we will support them everywhere.
But did the U.S. have a policy for what to do if those values started to blossom, uprooting the foundation of a U.S.-backed dictator such as Mubarak? Critics have their doubts. Either way, President Obama is clearly showing Mubarak the door and hoping he will walk through it.
The key question he should be asking himself is, how do I leave a legacy behind in which Egypt is able to get through this transformative period? My hope is that he will end up making the right decision.
And the latest example of the administration ratcheting up the rhetoric, Chris Dion, is Vice President Biden in a phone call with Egyptian Vice President Suleiman said that the Egyptian government needed to present a clear timeline for the way forward so as to assuage the demonstrators in the street. Chris Dion.
Jake, what you said there about wanting Gamal to get out of power, of course, the president now here has accepted the resignation of Gamal and the entire ruling party leadership. And you've seen today these talks begin with the Muslim Brotherhood and other opposition. How do you think that's going to go down? Is that what the White House is looking for?
The White House's immediate response to the news that Gamal had stepped down from the executive board of the party, of the political party there, was, great, we need more. And then in terms of the meetings with the Muslim Brotherhood, again, the response is, great, we need more. There is concern by the administration that because of all the repression in Egypt for decades, the Muslim Brotherhood may be right now the leading opposition to Mubarak's party, and that's why they want some time before these elections actually happen so other parties and other ideas can emerge to present a choice so it's not just Mubarak's party versus the Muslim Brotherhood. Christian.
Jake, thanks so much from the White House. And we have some breaking news. The meeting out of what happened today has come up with several proposals, including allowing freedom of the internet and text messaging, releasing political prisoners, promising not to harass those protesters who've been in the street, setting up constitutional amendment committees, and indeed meeting a lot of the concessions that the opposition has been demanding.
The Arab world is undergoing a serious process of change. The Arab world, the Arab societies are looking to the future. The young people have their own dreams and their own drive, their own aspirations. I expect that the Arab world within 1 or 2 to 5 years will be totally different.
That was part of my interview with Amr Moussa, Egyptian diplomat and Secretary General of the Arab League. Welcome to our special roundtable here in Cairo. Joining me to talk about all the events of this tumultuous week, Anthony Shadid of the New York Times, Nadia Abu El Magid, Egyptian journalist, David Muir of ABC News, Lamia Radi, also an Egyptian journalist, and John Simpson, World Affairs editor of the BBC. John Simpson, you've been covering these monumental upheavals for so many years. Is it tenable, this standoff, this political stalemate? What do you think is going to happen?
He's not moving. He's an old man. He's got the pride and the stubbornness of an old man. He wants to go out in his terms. I still think it's a fantastic achievement to have got him to agree not to stand at the election. I think that's the prime achievement of what we've seen.
Anthony Shadid, you've been also covering this region for so long. Is it a fantastic achievement by the people? Have they actually won a victory already?
I think they have won a victory to some extent, but I think the difficulty facing the opposition is, can they translate these demands of the street into real political capital? Can they have someone that represents them pushing forward an agenda that is far more far more sweeping than the simple resignation of President Mubarak?
You've been in the squares, we all have, all this week. What do you think is the message at the end of this week from the people who we've been talking to?
Well, certainly you can read victory on all the faces there, young and old. And when you hear about the amount of money that's being spent every day here in Egypt, lost here in this economy, that's what the Egyptian commander, the army commander who went into Tahrir Square just a short time ago, tried to appeal to the protesters by saying, please, let's save what's left of Egypt. So it's a question of who's going to blink here.
Something significant has just happened this weekend with Gamal Mubarak, the presumed heir for so many years. Not only did the president tell me that he never intended him to run, but now he has resigned from his position near the top of the ruling party. The whole executive council, the leadership of the ruling party, has also resigned. This is more than just cosmetic, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. I think the day of these big, grand old dictatorships, handed down father to son, all that sort of stuff, that seems to me to be going, not just in Egypt, but in the area. If it hasn't gone, then it ceased to be kind of fashionable. It ceased to be acceptable. And nevertheless, whoever takes over and whatever government is formed, they won't be able to forget what's happened here. That'll always be something they'll be careful to avoid happening again.
I think there is before and after. There is before and after the 25th of January. I think like what the youth did surprised everybody, including themselves. I don't think anybody expected this to happen.
Do you think that, Lamia, that they've made a stand that can never be reversed?
Honestly, I have never seen Egyptians behaving in such a way. For the first time, they were regaining their country back. It is our back. It was like the Republic of Tahrir is ours. It is not theirs. And by theirs, they meant the regime that has been taking it.
I think Americans have been fascinated with the muscle that comes with the social networking, the tools that the youth have used here in Egypt. Mm-hmm. We all use it back in the States, mm-hmm. Facebook, Twitter, and I'm curious if you think that now that they know what they can do with these tools, there's no turning back.
I think the youth knew what they can do. I think the problem is that the regime didn't know.
Can I say, though, that I really think it's a mistake to present this as the people of Egypt coming out against the government. I mean, there's a mistake. I think that is a mistake because it isn't the people of Egypt. It's certain a strong and extremely brave element in the people of Egypt. But you know, although those ugly, unpleasant groups of thugs that were coming in were shipped in, they believed what they were saying.
Are you saying that the majority of the country is not wanting change?
I've no idea what the proportions are, but what I am absolutely certain of is that there's a very large proportion of people who don't like what's happening and just want to get back to the old ways where you can make a living, you can go to the bank, you can buy food and so on, and they don't like all this noise.
I'm sorry, I think that it is not that they don't want change, they fear change. We are not used to change. And this is what Prime Minister Shafiq was talking about and what they're counting on.
What we've seen in the past 12 days is probably one of the most remarkable popular uprisings in the history of the modern Arab world. And what it's done, I think, in some ways, I think you could also make the argument that the revolution has already happened. For the first time in, I think, a generation, Egyptians have proved that they're not going to live by the rules of a government that has basically said they can't govern themselves. And I think this is a fundamental transformation of politics here. Like you pointed out, Lamia, in Liberation Square, we saw Egyptians organizing themselves, projecting an image that they wanted the rest of the world to see, that they wanted their leaders themselves to see, and that Mubarak, as recently as your interview with him, said, made that point, that he believed Egyptians would fall into chaos without him. And I think there's an incredibly, like a revolutionary aesthetic going on right now to prove that wrong.
So where does this go around the Arab world? So many have said, and Egypt has this long, proud culture and civilization of leading the Arab world. Does this have a domino effect?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah, definitely.
Perhaps the change, it's not to look at, you know, are we going to see kind of revolutionary change in these countries, but rather we're seeing a new style of politics, I think, in a lot of these Arab countries. In other words, you can take to the streets to press your demands. We've often thought that Islamist movements were the only vehicle of change in the Arab world. Yeah. What we've seen in Egypt, what we've seen in Tunisia, is that mass protests in the streets can demand changes in the governments that rule them.
Well, you mentioned Islamist movements. David, certainly in the United States right now, from the administration to the punditocracy, people are concerned because they see Iran as their template and they think, oh my goodness, this is going to be a fundamentalist revolution regime that comes. What are the fears?
Yeah, I think the fears are extremism. In addition to Iran, they look to Lebanon, Hezbollah, and in Gaza, Hamas. And on the one hand, you have President Obama coming here just a short time ago, telling the Egyptian people we should push for democracy here in your land, telling the Mubarak administration that they had to push for this too. And yet now we have the protests in the square. They believe they've been victorious, but there is this huge asterisk. What happens if the Muslim Brotherhood then sweeps into power and fills this political vacuum? On the one hand, you've allowed the people to speak, but I think there is an American audience that's fearful that you'll also have an extremist regime or presidency that then fills the void.
The other thing, I really believe, if like we really want democracy, we should give people a say. I don't understand, you know, like we say democracy, but we want to control the outcome.
Well, I think because is there a fear factor? Certainly, there were some young people I talked to in the square who said, mm-hmm. It looks like they're trying to hijack our movement. Do you think mm-hmm. that's a legitimate fear?
I think there is a legitimate fear. I wouldn't call it fear. It might be a fear from a Western point of view, but not from an Egyptian, average Egyptian point of view.
If you want democracy, if you stand by democracy, you have to accept what the people of a country are demanding.
But again, clearly the worry is that you can talk about wanting democracy while you're trying to achieve power and shut down democracy after the first elections once you're in power.
I think it's very unfair to judge somebody who has never been in power.
If we're going to have a real democratic experiment here, the Brotherhood's going to have to sit at the table and be a part of that.
But this is exactly what people were saying in Iran in 1978. I'm not taking a side in this, in any of this. I just think you've got to enter these things with open eyes. You've got to realize what the dangers are, what the possibilities are. And if you want democracy, you've got to walk towards the possibility that something like what happened in Iran might perhaps happen here.
But I don't think, honestly, yeah. I don't think that having the Muslim Brotherhood regime would be the outcome of democracy. It is the outcome of dictatorship, of 30 years or maybe 50 years of dictatorship. It is the reaction to this.
What's wrong about the Muslim Brotherhood saying that they want to sort of play a role in the, you know, in the political game? Why is it a crime?
It's the big bogeyman that frightens everyone in Egypt, in the region, and in the West.
But I think the Brotherhood, among all the protesters in Liberation Square, is seen as part of the old guard in itself in some ways. I mean, I think it got overtaken by events that we saw in Liberation Square. And I think there's an unarticulated voice out there right now among the protesters, among the youth, among the dispossessed here, that isn't being represented right now. And I think that's a whole other force that we're going to have to reckon yeah. with as we
Indeed,
go forward.
Indeed, a very prominent American commentator, Leslie Gelb, has just written that the punditocracy, the talkocracy, has been intoxicated by the vision of the protests in the square and is being naive about the political future, that there is no political leadership of this uprising, and nor is there a political tradition yet in this country to move towards democracy.
But I do think, though, that of all the countries that have been undergoing this kind of pressure, Egypt is one of the few which is capable of actually creating counterweights to the Islamic forces, and that real democratic parties are possible to come forth here. And one of the things I think is such an achievement of this uprising is that people have shown to themselves, as much as anything else, that they've got the guts to come out and they've got the guts to stand there and take the opposition. And I suspect that Egypt will actually get through this period better for it.
From the American perspective, the concern has been the last several days, a couple of weeks now, is will Egypt continue to be the ally in the war on terror that it has been? Will it continue to be a partner with Israel as Egypt has been? And those are the questions that Americans have about the Muslim Brotherhood.
Omar Suleiman told me that for sure Egypt has a peace treaty with Israel and will continue that peace treaty with Israel, and obviously would, under his vision of the future, be a strong ally of the West. You think, I mean, that's a given.
I think American officials, the administration at least, will be somewhat satisfied with a government that stays largely intact under the leadership of Suleiman if they can marginalize President Mubarak. Now, that is a far cry from what the protesters are demanding.
Let's talk about America. The United States, the bastion, the leading light of democracy, human rights, freedom all over the world, has been the example for the rest of the world. And yet, here, there was so much talk about how they felt America had let them down. Why is that?
I think it goes back to the Egyptian culture. We don't have gray areas. It has to be either black or white. People have to be either good or bad, with us or against us. Don't forget there's this love-hate relationship between Arabs and Egyptians towards America. Mm-hmm. They're always looking up to the States for something, but then they really retreat back when they interfere.
I think America wants stability here more than it wants democracy, and I think people understand that.
Do you think so, Anthony?
Do people understand it or accept it? I think there is a certain level of cynicism about the United States in this country, given, you know, decades of support that is given to an authoritarian regime.
But what could the U.S. administration, America, do to seize this opportunity rather than lose it?
That's a good question. I don't think they're willing to. I think they are probably motivated more by fear at this point of what might follow rather than the promise of what a truly democratic Arab world will represent.
And do you think, like John said, that America still in 2011, after Tunisia and after Egypt, wants stability more than democracy?
I think we're seeing American policy illustrate that right now in Egypt.
Do you think that?
Yes, I believe so.
Talking about the press and all the things people have told us, obviously everybody's seen how the forces of stability, so to speak, have really attacked us and Egyptian journalists all this week. How different do you think this has been from previous attempts at muzzling the press that you've seen?
It's been pretty bad, and I find it quite hard to forgive the government here for actively encouraging the sense that, you know, foreign journalists, I mean, it's been said on television more than once, foreign journalists are stirring the whole thing up, that the crowds in the square are stirred up by foreigners. Foreigners, foreigners, foreigners. For a country that depends so heavily on foreign tourism, for instance, foreign investment, I think it's a real short-term and foolish thing to do.
I think it's the crudest tactics, age-old tactics of an authoritarian regime, and I think it's a government that is in some ways reeling from what it's facing in Liberation Square and will resort to anything that it thinks can bolster its position, and this is one tactic of that. I mean, the headline on the government newspaper a few days ago when you had, you know, hundreds of thousands in Liberation Square was, I think, millions turn out for President Mubarak in the streets. I mean, just, you know, an alternative reality at this point, and there's going to be a backlash.
So the week has ended, by and large, quietly. The harassment of the press seems to have quieted down. The harassment of the protesters seems to have disappeared for the moment. What's your quick prediction for the next few days?
You know, I think there is underway a tug of war between revolt and reaction. And I think the government is quickly trying to consolidate its position so that it can weather what it thinks it can try to weather this popular uprising, and I think we're going to see something very decisive in the next days, whether the revolt, the uprising, can keep its momentum, can keep pressing its demands before the government consolidates its position.
Well, I want to ask you a question. You met President Mubarak, and the question everybody wants to know the answer to, is how did he look like? Was he shaken up?
To me, he seemed resigned to what had happened. And I asked him how he felt about having made that speech, that he was not going to stand again. And he said, I felt relief. And then he said, you know, I've been in public life for 62 years. I'm tired. I'm fed up. It's time to go. He seemed to me resigned. But for sure, he told me, I am not going to run away. And I think even Al-Baradei said today and said publicly that they're not looking for revenge or retribution, and they're looking for a dignified way out. Do you think that's the sort of epitome of the struggle right now?
I'm sure that is what he wants. I think the real challenge here is to keep the numbers in the square over the next days and weeks to keep up the pressure. And
you mean the challenge for the protesters?
Yes, yes, to keep the numbers there. It's a matter of numbers. And I have to say, I think really that all the pressures will be on those people in the square not to turn out tomorrow. Come today and you don't turn out tomorrow. And then I think the pressure will fade. But there have been some real gains, some real achievements, and I think those will last.
With that, thank you all for joining me.
Back now live from Cairo, and the question is, will the protesters start to go away now that so many of their concessions have been met, their demands have been met, their pressure is working? The truth is, all this week, in fact since this began, what we saw in Liberation Square was not about ideology or religion. What we saw was about Egypt. We saw the flag, we saw the national anthem. This region is so rich in natural resources, so rich in human potential, and yet the Arab world is the most left behind in the whole world when it comes to democracy. With the rumblings of this movement going throughout the region, there is fear amongst those authoritarian regimes that remain, but hope too that if Egypt gets this right, the rest of the region might as well. The future is uncertain, but it has begun. Thank you for watching. We'll see you again next week. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and stay with ABC News for all the coverage of this electrifying drama. I'm Christiana Amanpour. Goodbye from Cairo.